two qualities you want to bring to meditation. One is tranquility. The other is clear seeing. The Pali terms are samatha and vipassana. Over the centuries, the two of these have been separated into two separate techniques, two different ways of meditating. But in the Buddha's teachings, he puts them together. They're qualities of mind that bring you to right concentration, and through right concentration, they bring you to right view. And through right view, they can bring you to release. So you want to work on both of them. The question that you're supposed to ask of someone who's good at tranquility, if you find that you're not so good at it, is how do you get the mind to settle down? How do you get it to settle in so to become one with its object? And there are lots of ways of doing this. The most standard one is to focus on the breath, to watch the breath, to get a sense of when it's long, when it's short, and how it feels when it's long, when it's short, so you can adjust it. And from there you can go to deep or shallow, heavy or light. There are lots of ways of analyzing the breath and being sensitive to the way it affects the body, all the way to the question of where you feel the breathing. Where does it feel like the energy is coming into the body? Where does it feel like it's going out? Do you squeeze it out too much when you breathe out? Do you make it too tight when you breathe in? Try to get as sensitive as possible to how this feels. The more sensitive you are, the easier it is to stay down, the easier it is to settle down. And then you learn how to watch over it. So as it settles in, you don't get so excited that you tip it over, that you look after it, tend to it, so it feels comfortable, feels at home. In fact, that's one of the terms in Pali, Vihara Dhamma, means a home for the mind. That it feels right to be here. Let your awareness fill the body so that this home that you have here has a good solid foundation. And try to be aware of the breath as it fills the body. And you can adjust it here and adjust it there. So the breathing process feels good all the way through the in-breath, all the way through the out, and from in and out to in and out to in and out, just keep on going. That's how you get the mind to settle down. And the questions you bring to someone who's good at clear seeing is, how are fabrications to be viewed? How are they to be seen with clear insight? This is where the Buddhist definition of discernment comes in. He says, discernment means seeing things arising and passing away in a way that's penetrating and leads to the right ending of suffering. There's a lot there, a lot to unpack. Because you can see things arising and passing away and say, okay, I see things arising and passing away, big deal. We see it all the time. But how do you do it in such a way that it's penetrating? How do you do it in such a way that leads to the end of suffering? That goes deeper. Because the question you have to pose in your mind is, when you see things arising and passing away, okay, when do you notice that there's suffering arising and passing away, or stress arising and passing away? That's what you've got to look for. And you'll find that the answers you give will change in line with how sensitive you are. And the sensitivity has a lot to do with your concentration, with your tranquility. Because after all, the more sensitive you are to the breath, the more you be aware of things that are irritating. They might be very minor irritants, but as you're doing your work with the meditation, you want to clear them out. And in the process of doing that, you're beginning to see, oh, this has more stress than that. the level of stress just went up, the level of stress just went down. Okay, what happened when it went up and when it went down? Because that's the other part of seeing arising and passing away. It's seeing the connections. After all, the Buddha's teachings on dependent core arising didn't come just from saying, okay, arising, passing away, what else? That's it. It's not that's it. Watching arising and passing away, you should also hold in mind the question, okay, what else is arising and passing away together? This is where actual insight comes in. You begin to see connections. In fact, a lot of insight works on this principle. You look at one thing, but then you end up noticing something else that's around it. Like with the contemplation of the body. We go through the 32 parts. We've chanted it over and over again. And why do we do that? Is there anything wrong with the body? Some people say here you're saying bad things about the body. You're making people develop a bad body image. That's not the point. The point is to notice that there are all these things in the body, and yet we can have the perception that the body is beautiful. And it's really persistent, really tenacious. You get doctors who work in hospitals who have to do autopsies. And they can still go home and sleep with their spouses. What they see about the body in the hospital stays in the hospital. It's like Las Vegas. Whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And what they see when they have to take a corpse apart stays in the operating room. In fact, it sometimes doesn't even go outside the operating room. I know someone who visited a morgue one time, and he noticed all these girly calendars in the doctor's office, right next to where the autopsies were being performed. The mind has this really tenacious desire to want to find the body attractive. But the issue is not so much that there's anything wrong with the body, it's that desire. And the perceptions that we apply to the body, and what goes along with those perceptions. Why do we want it to look beautiful? Well, we have certain agendas around it. And one way to bring those agendas out into the open is to look at the body, take it apart in your mind, piece by piece by piece. Think of arranging the pieces. You can arrange them in nice little neat rows on the floor in front of you, in your mind. But then you look at them, you say, well, what is this? Is there anything here that's really worthy of lusting for, worthy of identifying with? Some people are really proud of their particular skin color. Well, you take the skin off and put it in a pile. What's really great about it? Yet somehow you can put it back together in your mind very quickly and get very attached to it. The problem is not with the body. The problem is with that attachment. But a good way of seeing the attachment is to start taking things apart and then noticing what happens when you start putting it back together again. At what point does the body become attractive? At what point does it become an object of pride, an object of lust? It's those other things that arise and pass away. Those are the things that you really want to see. So a lot of the clear seeing is looking at one thing and seeing the things that are connected to it, seeing out of the corner of your eye. And so when we see things arising and passing away, it's not just to say, okay, it's arising, it's passing away, so what? It's seeing where does the stress arise, where does the stress pass away, and then noticing what else is connected. You can do this with pain as well. When the mind is settled enough so that you can look at physical pain, you begin to see that it arises and passes away. Even just looking at the pure physicality of the pain or the pure painness of the pain, and you can begin to separate it out. Say there's a pain in your neck. Okay, what else is there in the neck? Is it just pain? Well, no, there's earth, there's water, there's wind, there's fire. Okay, which other one of those things is the pain? Well, it turns out if you really look at them, none of them are the pain. When you can separate the pain, especially from the earth element, you begin to see that it arises and passes away. It comes and goes, comes and goes. And sometimes its coming and going has to do with physical causes, and sometimes it has to do with mental causes. And particularly the point where the pain becomes a burden on the mind, there's a mental cause. There's a perception that went along with the pain that aggravated your concern, your worry, your identification with the pain. And you begin to see that those perceptions come and go, come and go. If you notice they're coming and going, you can come to the point, say, okay, I can let go of the current one so it doesn't have to come back again. Because you make up your mind that, okay, once this particular perception is gone, and if you notice that it's been causing the pain again and again and again, here we're talking about mental pain. Once you see the connection between the rise in the mental pain and that particular perception, you can make up your mind, okay, I'm not going to think that perception. What's going to happen then? And the experience of the pain changes radically. One of the strangest things that can happen is the sense that the pain goes away from the spot where it was in the body and actually goes zip into your heart and disappears. In which case you realize that there may have been a physical pain to begin with, but the mental perception actually maintained the pain even after the physical causes were gone. As soon as the mental perception is dropped, the pain will go away. Like those weird cases heard once or twice in Thailand of someone who had been possessed by a spirit, and a John Fuang had been asked to go check out the person who was lying sick in bed. And he didn't do anything. He came back and he told his students, you know, that the actual person has died, and this other spirit had moved in. If you drove out the spirit, it would die. The body would die. In other words, the actual person is gone, but something else has moved in to keep it animated for a while. But the mind can do the same thing with physical pain. You move into a physical pain, get really upset about it, have a very clear perception of here's a pain right here. And then the physical causes go away, and yet the mental side of this keeps it as a pain. Other times when you drop the perception, the actual physical pain is still there, but you realize that you've cut the bridge. That even though there's physical pain in the body, it doesn't have to pain the mind. So the whole principle here is to see things arising and passing away and to see what else is arising and passing away along with them. And where does this arising and passing away cause stress? Where does the stress arise? Where does the stress pass away? It's seeing the connections. That's what's penetrating and leads to the right ending of stress. Now, sometimes they say that seeing arising and passing away is a moment of awakening right there. But it's simply very different. There is the description of the Dharma eye, the arising of the Dharma eye that happens at stream entry. Whatever arises or whatever is subject to arising is also subject to passing away. Yang kinchi samudya dhammang sapantam nirata tamanti. It's all subject to a passing away. The Dhamma here means subject to. It's like when we chant jarantamomi. I am subject to aging. I am subject to illness. I am subject to death. So whatever is subject to arising is subject to passing away, all of it. And it sounds like, well, you're just watching the arising and passing away. But no, it's subject to origination is the actual word. And the origination means there's a connection. You want to see what else is there to cause it. And the other important thing is the all, everything. Because our normal way of watching things arising and passing away is to have a sense, well, there's somebody in here who is more lasting than the arising and passing away that it's watching. Otherwise, it wouldn't be able to keep that theme in mind. It's actually a form of concentration. Watching the arising and passing away, there are stages of concentration. John Lee mentions them, which you're not with a solid or single object, but there is a sense of singleness in the mind. Because the mind is taking the arising and passing away as its theme, the theme of the concentration. But when the insight into arising and passing away goes thorough and so deep that you actually get back to the observer itself, realize that this too has an intention that's driving it, and the attention comes again and again and again. There's a momentary intention, it stops, and it's replaced by another one, and then it stops. And as long as you can keep repeating the same intention, you can stay with your object concentration. But as you peel away the various layers of arising and passing away, and the various layers of stress, you finally begin to see that everything that arises and passes away is just that. Stress arising, stress passing away. Then there's this intention that's driving all of this, both the object and the subject. And when you can let go of the intention that's creating that sense of subject, then you experience something else entirely, something that doesn't arise, something that's not subject to origination, it's not subject to passing away. And it's from that perspective that you look back on everything else and say, oh, everything that was subject to rising or passing away, subject to origination, has passed away. But this other thing doesn't pass away. It's because it's not subject to origination. So it's not just a moment of watching arising and passing away. It's something that goes a lot deeper and has a different impact. It's a different sort of experience entirely. It's just not the case that just a moment of mindfulness or a moment of watching arising and passing away is the same as a moment of awakening. It's a very different kind of thing entirely. The watching the arising and passing away is a way of developing mindfulness, a way of developing concentration. And then as you begin to see the connections, as you begin to see the causes and effects out of the corner of your eye, that's when it starts to get penetrating. That's when it can lead to the right ending of stress. So the question is, what do you watch? And it can be any of the themes that are in the among the factors of dependent core arising. Everything from fabrication in the mind to consciousness, acts of consciousness, intentions, moments of attention, contact, feeling, perceptions, the physical elements in the body, the sense spheres, feelings, craving, becoming. Any of these things. The problem is you never know beforehand which of them is going to be the one that draws your attention. So it's good to practice with different ones until you find something that really seems to get to the nub of the matter, the area where the mind is really fascinated, really obsessed with one particular kind of thing arising or passing away, or one particular thing, and you haven't been able yet to see its arising or passing away. When you suddenly realize, oh, this too arises and passes away, this too is subject to origination. That really seems to head home. There's one sutta where a monk goes around and visits other monks and asks, well, what do you have to focus on in order to gain awakening? One says you focus on the five aggregates, and the other says you focus on the six sense spheres, and the other says you focus on dependent core arising, the elements. Each monk has a different answer. This upsets him. So he goes to see the Buddha. Why do these monks all have such different answers? The Buddha says it's because at the moment when they gained insight, that was the topic they were focused on. You can focus on any of these, but you don't know beforehand which is the one that's going to work for you. So it's good to explore a bit. You can start with the body, because we do have a lot of attachment around the body. Then you may be surprised to see what some of your attachments are. So when we analyze the body, say, in terms of the 32 parts, it's not that we're saying the body is bad, it's just the Buddha wants to have an effect on your mind. What happens to your mind when you do this analysis? Which parts don't like the analysis? Which parts object, feel threatened? And then watch that sense of feeling threatened come and go, and see what else comes and goes along with it. As I say, the body is not the problem. The problem comes from the mind's agendas around the body, and a good way of digging those agendas out, because they do tend to operate on a subterranean level. A good way to bring them into the light of day is to start analyzing the body in this way, to see what resists. So these are some of the ways in which you bring both tranquility and insight to the meditation. As the Buddha says, some people find it easy to develop the tranquility and they have to work harder at the insight. Others have to work harder at the insight. Excuse me, others start out and find an easy time analyzing things, but the mind doesn't really settle down. Some people find it easy to develop the two qualities together. But whichever sort you are, you know that ultimately you have to get both mastered. You find yourself weak in one area, you focus on that. So you can bring them into balance. If the mind is steady enough so it can see clearly, and it sees clearly enough so it can make itself even more and more steady, the two go together. Upasaka Ghi's images of two hands washing each other. Do you ever try putting your one hand under a faucet to wash that hand? You find that you can't get the whole hand done. You've got to get the other hand to come in and rub the back of the hand, the other hand. The two of the hands washing each other like this, they get a lot cleaner than if one tries to just wash itself. So your tranquility washes your insight washes your tranquility. And when they work together, they can take you to release.